The science of medicine is actually relatively young. Not even a full century ago, treatments for many diseases were limited and their effectiveness was questionable. But as we become more attached to the empirical method of science, there's been a renewed awareness into some of the medicinal practices that came before pharmaceuticals and sophisticated surgeries. I'm Matthew Law Middleton, and on today's Central Standard, we'll be looking at alternative medicines, from acupuncture to vitamins. There's new research that is showing where some of the healing remedies from the past could be the keys to unlocking our present-day health. That, plus later in the hour, we'll be bringing the tropical beach to you with a look at Kansas City's reggae scene. That's all coming up right after this news. Modern medicine has provided us with incredible life-saving technologies. The triple bypass, antibiotics, drugs to increase attention, relieve pain, vaccines that protect against devastating diseases, and even the flu. However, it hasn't always been that way. It wasn't until the 1920s when science and the science of medicine actually began to work. And along the way, people have been wondering if perhaps some of the solutions to our health might lie in the things that have been around for much longer, like acupuncture, massage, and diet. In the last several decades, attention and has been put to integrated medicine or alternative medicine and has become a serious scientific discipline. I'm Matthew Law Middleton, and today on Central Standard, we're going to be looking at the science behind integrative medicine, the various therapies, and the controversies. And later in the hour, we'll be introducing you to the soothing and warming sounds of Kansas City's reggae scene. But right now, joining me in studio is Dr. Jeannie Drisco. She's the director of KU's Integrative Medicine, and she's a professor of orthomolecular medicine. Good morning, Dr. Drisco.
Hi, Matthew. Thank you so much for inviting me on Central Standard.
Oh, you're welcome. And then joining us by phone from his practices in New York is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. He's the founder and medical director of the Hoffman Center in New York City. He's the author of a number of books and articles for both public for public consumption and health professionals. He also hosts his own radio program and podcast called Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Hoffman, thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
My pleasure, Matthew. Thank you.
So this question, it's for both of you, but I want to start with you, Dr. Drisco. It seems like you could say a lot of things could be classified as traditional medicine, anything that isn't a surgery or a traditional pharmaceutical. But perhaps a better question is, what is not integrative medicine?
Well, that is a very good question. But when you think about the roots of conventional modern medicine, it often goes back to the medicinal plants that were used to make the pharmaceuticals and to give us the idea of the molecules that were used. So there's a difference that we look at in our practice at KU Integrative Medicine, and that is it acute medicine or is it chronic care? And if it's acute medicine, then we turn that over to our conventional colleagues, like a heart attack or a broken bone or a very serious infection, as you mentioned. But if there is a chronic problem like chronic pain or fibromyalgia or even cancer, then we try and look at these therapies that may be beneficial in that chronic situation.
Dr. Hoffman, anything to add to that?
Well, what is not integrative medicine is any kind of medicine that precludes some of the healing techniques that really have value. So to say that, some people have said acupuncture, that's quackery. There's no value to that. It's unproven. Or chiropractic, that's just hocus pocus. This is a type of exclusionary medicine or redlining of medicine to include just mainstream orthodox medical procedures, which are, of course, necessary and valid, but we want to integrate natural techniques or traditional medical practices into our modern healthcare system. That's why we call it integrative medicine.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to get into some of the semantics of the words we use to actually describe it, because I think that kind of tells a little bit of the story of integrative medicine. But Dr. Drisco, you direct the KU's integrative medicine department or clinic. How does it interface with the typical other parts of the hospital or other patients who go to their own primary care provider?
Well, I think the best answer for that is to talk about the semantics, as you brought up. In the 70s and 80s, it was all alternative, and it was an anathema. The conventional doctors hated even the thought of it. But then in the 90s, it became complementary. So it became part of an armamentarium that you might be able to use. But as Dr. Hoffman said, now it's considered integrative because we work shoulder to shoulder with our conventional colleagues. Mm-hmm. So I work very closely with the oncologists or the neurologists or any of the other doctors and nurses and other practitioners at KU Med.
Do you have to find that you're the one petitioning those specialists or primary care providers? Or is it usually the patient who's soliciting the primary care provider or their specialist be like, I kind of want to try something else. What else is out there?
Well, in the beginning, it was really patient-driven. There's no doubt about that. But now I think because they're seeing, because of some of the research that we're doing, but also because of the outcomes of the patients, they are coming to us and they're asking us for help.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Hoffman, when people come to your practice, are they typically referred to you by other physicians or primary care providers, or are they coming to you as an additional or alternative option?
Well, mostly I think these days people are voting with their feet. They're finding that conventional medicine either doesn't have the answers that they want or that the answers involve therapies that may put them at risk of toxic side effects, and they find that they'd rather use low-tech approaches, for example, to treat hypertension or high cholesterol. They might be looking for an alternative to a strict medical regimen, of course necessary at times, but they want to minimize their exposure to potential hazards of drugs. Part of the problem is that conventional physicians may be reluctant to refer to alternative and complementary practitioners because of liability concerns. There's so much of fear of malpractice that doctors may jealously guard their patients and say, well, you know, don't go there, it's unsure. Although I've been practicing for over 30 years now, and I think the attitudes really are changing, as Dr. Drisco states, that they're now doctors are saying, hey, I've got this real challenging patient. Patient's not responding to my therapies. Be my guest. You know, have at it. Try alternative medicine. I'm not sure precisely what that is, or integrative medicine, but it seems to work for many of my patients.
Dr. Hoffman, can you give me an example of some of those really challenging patients you've seen and therapies that you've applied that for some worked, and then we'll turn to you, Dr. Drisco.
Well, one of the areas that I specialize in is gastrointestinal ailments, and they may range from simple GERD or heartburn or indigestion to more serious ailments like ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. Mm-hmm. And surely there are powerful medications that can sometimes help patients. But I often see patients who either get an incomplete response to these medications or they're concerned about the long-term side effects of reliance on these medications. So by altering diet, by using herbal treatments, by using probiotics sometimes, probiotics being the good bacteria to replace the harmful bacteria that may be overgrowing. Patients often rely less on medications and sometimes are able to go off medications altogether. So that's a very satisfying area to work in.
Mm-hmm. And I want to come a little bit more back to those details, but a quick question first. Is that concern about like long-term dependence on traditional pharmaceuticals? It seems to me like sometimes that's like a fear that is kind of like it's a kind of intuitive fear, like that I can understand many people having, that they'd be really attached to these drugs and like, you know, this drug is not a part of me, like why am I dependent upon it? But I mean, if it's gone through the clinical trials, if it's been approved by the FDA, are those fears justified, or is it kind of, how do you counsel your patients about like being complementary to those drugs or coming off them? Like, why the need to get off them?
Well, I would have to say that all drugs, and I think it's been acknowledged, have potential side effects. The same thing can be said for natural therapies, herbal medicines, and natural interventions. The side effect profile, however, is generally lower with natural products, although it's not completely absent. So, for example, if you try to treat a gastrointestinal problem with an immune suppressive medication, you may suppress your immunity to other common infections. You will reduce the inflammation, but you may open yourself up to other complications. And many patients come to me and ask me quite reasonable questions. They say, well, why am I getting this? What's the underlying cause? Conventional medicine sometimes says, look, we don't ask that question because people just get stuff and we address it effectively with medications. But natural medicine tries in many cases to come up with an answer as to what is the causative factor. Is it a lifestyle factor? Is it a dietary factor? That is not always the case, but sometimes we're able to pinpoint it and help to alleviate the underlying cause, and then patients improve.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM, KCUR. We're streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Matthew Law Middleton, and our guests are Dr. Jenny Drisco. She's the director of KU's Integrative Medicine and professor of orthomolecular medicine here in Kansas City. And then Dr. Ronald Hoffman. He's the founder and medical director of the Hoffman Center in New York City and host of the radio program Intelligent Medicine. We're discussing integrative medicine, also known as alternative medicine, formerly complementary medicine, and we're going to be looking at some of the research that's being done there and some of the dispel some of the myths from the reality. But Kansas City, do you use integrative medicines? What has that impact been on your health? Or perhaps you have a question about integrative medicine. Join our conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can email us. Our address is centralstandard@kcur.org. Dr. Drisco, do you find that so people are coming to you less and less as an option of last resort?
Well, we used to call it resort medicine because they were coming as the last resort. But now we're finding people that are coming even for wellness. And I'd like to talk a little bit more about something that we participated in recently, and that was the TAC trial, the trial to assess chelation therapy.
Oh, hold on. Chelation therapy, what is that?
That is a controversial therapy that really had its start in the 50s. It's a molecule that binds heavy metals in the body and carries it out. And I can remember when I was an intern in medicine, and the director of the service that I was on, we were on rounds walking around the hospital, and he said, oh, there's this chelation therapy, and it's horrible. You should never let your patients do it. And then fast forward to this past decade, I was involved in one of the largest trials for chelation therapy in the country. And we had about 1,700 patients enrolled, half of which received chelation therapy. And these were patients that already had documented heart disease. So they received the chelation therapy. And we did show that there was a benefit in those patients receiving chelation therapy on having future cardiovascular events. So it was very exciting to be able to, instead of just having dogma and saying it doesn't work, we've now gotten into a time in integrative medicine where it doesn't matter if the therapy was called complementary and alternative medicine initially. If rigorous science is applied to it and it's found to be helpful, then it's just good science.
Can you explain a little bit? I'm not understanding the mechanics of chelation therapy. So is it a herbal medicine I take? How do I get these hard metals out of my system? And what was the theory behind why that's a good thing to do and why we think it might help or it's shown to, in this one study, reduce risk to heart attacks?
And there has been anecdotal evidence or evidence passed by word of mouth for many, many years about the benefit of this. But the mechanics of it, it's an IV solution. And in the IV solution, there's the chelator, or the what's called EDTA chelation, and it also has some B vitamins, it has some minerals in it, and it has vitamin C in it. Mm-hmm. So it's a very rigorous applied therapy. So it's given once a week for about 30 weeks with several tune-ups thereafter.
But by IV, this isn't something you go to your health food store and pick up, you know, a bottle of
of chelation therapy. Correct. In fact, there's probably some harm in taking it orally because it binds good minerals as well as the heavy metals, and in doing so may prevent, by taking it by mouth, may prevent some of those good minerals from being absorbed in the body and going to use.
I might add that there's a kind of a curious double standard with regard to the study, because commonly when we offer alternative therapies to the medical profession, they say, yeah, but you know, if it was really all that was cracked up to be, why aren't there good studies? And sometimes we say, well, it's very hard to study the effects of diet or, you know, like a lot of the different things we do. But with this this particular therapy, actually, Dr. Driscoll and I were involved in planning for this for many. Literally, we wanted to do this study for decades. And finally, it was done at a great cost. And when it proved successful, then certain people in the medical profession said, no, this can't possibly be. Yes, the study shows that there's a benefit, but there must be something wrong with the study. And ultimately, it's not going to have a big impact on medical practice in this country. If this were a drug, the drug would be immediately adopted and would be dispensed by doctors and hospitals. So, you know, clearly there is a bit of a double standard in medicine these days when it comes to integrative practices, even if they're scientifically proven.
Yeah, and I want to get to the one of the words used right in that response, which was cost. In terms of who's doing the research, are you folks typically getting your grants from the NIH? Where is the money coming from, Dr. Driscoll?
Well, unfortunately, because so many of these therapies have this baggage associated with it, let's say, the conventional funders, like federal funders, NIH, National Institutes of Health being one, they're not interested in funding a lot of these therapies, but they did fund the trial to assess chelation therapy. But they are less likely to do so again because it raised so much controversy because they said you're wasting our federal dollars studying these therapies, although there's probably between 500,000 and plus of these infusions given every year. So it has to be studied. Is it safe? Is it helpful? Or should it be thrown out?
Dr. Hoffman, anything to add?
Well, you know, clearly chelation is something that involves a medicine. The main active ingredient is EDTA. And EDTA enjoys kind of a weird place in the pharmaceutical industry. It's not really covered by a patent that is owned by a major pharmaceutical firm. Often, one of the ways you can get studies funded is a drug company will come up with an idea. They'll spend, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars on research, and then they will back studies to either validate it or, you know, maybe it doesn't pass muster. It's an investment in a product that can then return hundreds of millions or billions of dollars later. Unfortunately, certain things like, you know, taking extract of turmeric or taking green tea, these are not things where you're going to see a big sponsorship because, you know, anybody can make a product that involves that. And that sort of guides the nature of the research that we see. That's why the government had to step in and do this study. But then a lot of people are saying, well, you know, we're trying to cut costs. The NIH is strapped for funds. Let's do research on mainstream cancer therapies, not on weird stuff that alternative doctors may be using.
Which brings me to this. Dr. Driscoll, you recently published a study, correct, looking at specifically vitamin C, correct, and cancer treatment. And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. That study was published on February 5th in Science Translational Medicine. And it was a partner between conventional oncologists, basic science researchers, and integrative medicine practitioners. And we looked at intravenous vitamin C as a therapy for ovarian cancer.
So specifically just ovarian cancer. And
yes.
Again, this isn't like go to your local pharmacy, pick up, you know, tabs of vitamin C.
Right.
This is a very
right.
controlled situation.
It is, because once again, oral is very different than IV.
Mm-hmm.
But as you said, this study was not funded by the NIH.
Mm-hmm.
We had to go out for private funding to be able to fund this study.
And what did you find when you applied IV vitamin C for these ovarian cancer patients?
Well, it was very interesting because in the animals, there was benefit when it was added to the conventional chemotherapy. In humans, there was no harm, and some of these patients received 100 grams of grams of vitamin C in their vein at each therapy. And the most exciting thing is that there was reduction in side effects in the women that took the IV vitamin C with their chemotherapy. So there's a promise of benefit in humans.
So by those benefits, so what you're saying is, for example, like some of the side effects of the chemotherapy itself, not necessarily perhaps in the outcome of the cancer, but in your life through that process of living with the cancer, the quality of life could potentially be better with this treatment.
Well, the quality of life was significantly improved. Mm-hmm. The benefit in outcome, we didn't have enough study subjects in the study to look at the effect at the end of the day, but we do see a trend to benefit in outcomes in the cancer.
And so this transitions pretty nicely into talk about vitamins, minerals, and that kind of thing. Dr. Hoffman, do you find that a lot of what you're prescribing or suggesting that your patients use is vitamins and minerals, particularly for gastritis, their gastrointestinal tract, or is it something beyond or in addition to that?
Well, you know, I think we're seeing pushback against the idea that, you know, a single daily multivitamin is a panacea for all that ails you. And this is actually never what nutritionally oriented medicine was about. You know, we primarily place an evidence on an emphasis on diet. We also have a whole new armamentarium of natural compounds which are scientifically prepared from ordinary things like kitchen spices. Or green tea, the example I used earlier, or red wine yields resveratrol. And these are amazing compounds which may have a very, very potent effects in the body, much like pharmaceutical drugs, but generally with a greater safety profile because they already exist in nature, and they have been used traditionally by many cultures for thousands of years. So you know, we're reaching a crossroads, I think, in nutrition, where we're not just talking about the A, B, C, D, E vitamins. We're talking about very specific, scientifically validated, targeted products, which may not just prevent disease, you know, take your one-a-day multivitamin, but also may be targeted towards medical conditions to be used as nutraceuticals. That's kind of a cool new word, natural products that are nutrients but have almost a pharmaceutical effect.
And Dr. Drisco, so are these things that, like, anybody should just be like, oh, I read this article, I should go and pick up, you know, more vitamin C or more minerals? It sounds to me like what Dr. Hoffman is suggesting is that, you know, we don't do that. We do that in consultation with an integrative medicine, you know, specialist.
That's right. I think there can be some degree of self-direction on the part of patients, and patients want that. But on the other hand, and I know Dr. Hoffman practices similar to the way I do, we get down to the roots of the tree. So you have up in the branches the leaves that have bloomed into all kinds of diagnosis, and conventional medicine treats those diagnoses. But we go down the trunk, down into the roots, and look for the biochemistry of that patient. So we're measuring vitamins, minerals, good fats, essential fatty acids, amino acids, and all kinds of things that will guide us, tailor us to give a nutritional prescription for that patient. And the basis, the foundation is good diet, good nutrition, as Dr. Hoffman said.
And we actually have a caller here, Linda from Keenery, I believe. Linda, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you.
Did I get that town correct? Where are you calling from?
Well, locally it's pronounced Kearney.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That
like
is my
Kearney,
bad.
Nebraska.
Okay. Well, Linda, welcome to Central Standard. You had a question about diet, it sounds like.
Well, I was wondering if, given how disconnected most consumers are now from locally produced, nutrient-dense, real food that's grown without the use of a lot of poisons, if that might now be considered just real, good food, an alternative therapy.
Mm-hmm. Good question, Linda. Dr. Drisco, where does diet and what you choose to eat fall into your practice?
Well, Linda's absolutely right. We have become disconnected from our food supply. And there's young people that have told me, oh, I just want to eat regular food. And what that means is they want to drive through Wendy's or Hardee's and pick up a bag of food and be on their way. But the real food is the food that is locally grown and is not using a lot of chemicals. It's clean, and it's a nourishment, and it's now part of our prescription in our clinic.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Hoffman, anything to add to that?
Well, you know, I would say that probably about 80% of our problems would be resolved if people ate, quote, real food. But people in my hometown, New York, are pretty nutritionally sophisticated, and many of them are eating organic food. They shop at Whole Foods. They eat grass-fed meat, or they're on vegan diets, and they're not always well. So diet is not a panacea. Sometimes what we think is wholesome isn't really agreeing with us. Some people who are having plenty of whole grains, for example, that may be problematic. It may cause them gastrointestinal problems, or may cause them types of autoimmune reactions that cause symptoms that don't seem to be related to the food that they're eating. So there's a little bit of an art to determining the optimal diet for people. Different strokes for different folks. I'm sure Dr. Drisco would agree. So it may involve some individualization.
Mm-hmm. And we have a caller who called in to ask, what is more natural for humans to use, a chemical, a drug, or a plant, or an animal derivative, specifically when it comes to female hormones and replacement therapy? Dr. Drisco?
Well, that is, again, should be tailored to the person. And I know what the caller's intent is, that we should be looking at bioidentical or more, in quotes, natural hormones.
What do you mean by bio? Yeah. So, for example, like synthetic, like estrogen or other hormones?
That's,
is that what you're referring
to? The synthetic forms have been used for many, many years and are pharmaceutically prepared. But now there's a drive to use a molecule that matches a molecule in the woman's body. And we have been looking at the amount of hormone in a person's body by, again, tailored approach, by looking at a 24-hour urine collection. And not everybody, not all women, not all men need hormone replacement therapy. They may need to sleep. They may need to improve their underlying fatigue level and many other approaches before just dropping into a hormone. But if a hormone's indicated, then it should be probably the molecule that matches the one in the person's body already and used in sparing doses and followed carefully so that you're not overdosing that person with hormone and causing harm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Dr. Hoffman, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that the part of the problem with, and I'm not always going to characterize every conventional practitioner this way, but drug companies make it very simple, providing a one-size-fits-all approach for, say, a woman in menopause. Like, here's the pill, you know, it's got this amount of estrogen, this amount of progesterone. They're synthetic, so they're not really natural to the body. And there are so many different permutations that seem to be right for women, or alternatively men who may require a testosterone therapy, that it really should be individualized, and we should start, you know, as with our food, as with our diet, as with the remedies that we use. We should really start with natural remedies rather than the other way around.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Matthew Law Milton, and I'm joined by Dr. Jeannie Drisco. She's the director of KU's Integrative Medicine, and Dr. Ronald Hoffman. He's the founder of and medical director of the Hoffman Center in New York City and host of the program Intelligent Medicine. We're discussing integrative medicine, and we want to know from you, do you use integrative medicines in your daily life or in your health plan? What impact has it had on your health? Or perhaps you have a question for us about integrative medicine. Join our conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Catherine did just that. She's calling from Mission Hills. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning. I believe Dr. Hoffman touched on the fact in the introduction that perhaps integrative medicine can be used to treat high cholesterol. I found that when I take a prescription statin, I get lots of muscle aches, and I've tried a couple, and apparently that's a side effect, and I'd like to consider something different.
Well, number one, we have to ask the question, is your elevated cholesterol a problem? So, for example, I just saw prior to getting on this call with you a woman who we've been treating for high cholesterol, and her cholesterol was over 300, which is generally acknowledged to be very high. But we did a test where we determined whether this is having an impact on her blood vessels. It's called an EBT heart scan, which measures the calcium in her coronary arteries. And at the age of, she's in her mid-50s, she had zero plaque. So this is actually a pattern we see in some women, is that their cholesterol can be high, but often their HDL, their good cholesterol, is high. So it may be unnecessary to take medication with harmful side effects to lower the cholesterol. In other words, we take a problem, and we may find out ultimately that it's not so much of a problem, and we don't need to lower cholesterol. We're sort of a mania in this country. We're playing cholesterol limbo. How low can you go? And I think that in some cases that's unnecessary. But where it's necessary to lower cholesterol, you can lower it with the right kind of diet. It depends on the person's nutritional type, but some people do better restricting cholesterol and fats, but many people do better when they restrict sugars and refined carbohydrates. That'll lower cholesterol. Doing exercise will raise HDL. Taking niacin can be an alternative. It raises HDL and lowers cholesterol. Also,
HDLs are high density lipids, right? The good cholesterol.
Yeah, the so-called good cholesterol. And the other thing is, for some people who don't tolerate the medications, if they really need to get that statin effect, they can take a natural statin, which is made from the herb red yeast rice. And actually, there's some medical journal articles which now show that you can effectively lower cholesterol with red yeast rice, often not obtaining the same side effects. So there are various alternatives.
Dr. Driscoll, you wanted to add something?
I totally agree with Dr. Hoffman, and just want to reiterate that at KU Integrative Medicine, we always start with the diet, and that does not mean a low cholesterol diet. That means looking at the impact of grains and the processed carbohydrates, and we find that if those patients are sensitive to that, and they are, if they change their diet, their cholesterol often follows.
Mm-hmm. And we also have another call here from Vaughn. Vaughn from Bern, Kansas. Vaughn, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. I just wanted to support what you were saying. Last May, I started running a fever and started rapidly losing weight. Was misdiagnosed with lymphoma. It wound up being sarcoidosis. And they wanted to put me on prednisone, real heavy doses of that, and I had friends that had some really negative experiences with that. So I talked to a naturopath who put me on pretty heavy amounts of turmeric, this product called LymphaCleanse, which you got at the health food store, and forgive me for not knowing what's in it, but it's a bunch of different fruit extracts in a little capsule. And then asparagus, and I had to have steamed asparagus, couldn't do like raw or pickled or anything of that nature. But
not smothered in hollandaise sauce, I suspect.
Right. But, you know, I had started running a fever, and May the 5th, every evening I'd run a fever about 100 degrees. I lost 37 pounds, mm-hmm. and I started taking these products September the 28th. I had a fever every day from May the 5th till September 28th. I'd had two different biopsies. I had a 24-hour urine study, as you know, you were just talking about. Within 3 days of taking the products, the natural products, the fever was gone. I quit losing weight, and I feel great.
Mm. Vaughn, thank you so much for sharing your experience. Dr. Driscoll, you wanted to add something to that?
Well, I thank Vaughn for calling in because he brought up something that a lot of the listeners may not be aware of, and that's the practice of naturopathy or naturopathic physicians. And there are currently 4 schools in the United States that train naturopathic doctors. And the first 2 years of their medical school, they have pretty similar types of training as the doctor of osteopaths and the medical doctors do in their medical schools, but it's the last 2 years where they learn medicinal plants, botanical medicine, acupuncture, and all kinds of other therapies. And then after they graduate, they can go out and treat with natural medicines, and they have board certification and that sort of thing. So it's a very interesting practice, and currently in Kansas, we do have a licensing act for naturopathic doctors.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Hoffman, I want to, you know, we have just a few minutes left here in this segment of the show, but I want to open up this question of how do we, like Vaughn was saying earlier, you know, he went up and picked up a lot of these things for himself. And you know, the vitamins and minerals, I think it's something like a $12 billion a year industry. It's a very large industry. I find myself constantly wondering, like, you know, why aren't these things already, you know, made into drugs or indoctrinated into, quote unquote, traditional medicine? Why is integrative medicine so outside of the norm? And you know, Vaughn's experience seemed to be that, like, traditional medicine did not work for him, but, like, obviously this kind did. Dr. Hoffman?
Well, yeah, I don't think we need to have a dichotomy between conventional medicine and these alternative or integrative practices. I mean, I think Dr. Driscoll really epitomizes the new integration, because 30 years ago, it would have been inconceivable to have the kind of center that she operates within a medical school, a university hospital setting, to administer under very rigorous conditions by licensed and well-educated practitioners the safest, best documented natural therapies around. And I think that should offer a measure of reassurance to people who turn to complementary medicine or integrative medicine, whatever you call it, that it's being offered in a responsible way. I mean, there are people out there who are renegades, who may practice irresponsibly, but more and more, I think we're having very well-trained, scientifically prepared practitioners enter the field.
And then last question, sadly, for you, Dr. Driscoll. What is the process of becoming licensed and studying, specializing in integrative medicine? How does that differ or in addition to your typical
physician? Well, it's really changed radically this year. Mm-hmm. And because now there's going to be board certification for MDs and DOs in integrative medicine. And that board certification is being offered by the American Board of Physician Specialties. And after, there's going to be a short grandfather process where physicians can enter into the board certification. But this examination will tell the nation that we have qualified practitioners.
Mm, great. Well, that's all the time we have for this part of the show. But I do want to thank Dr. Jeannie Driscoll, the director of KU's Integrative Medicine, and she's a professor of orthomolecular medicine. Dr. Driscoll, thank you so much.
Thank you, Matthew.
And Dr. Ronald Hoffman, who's an integrative medicine and has an integrative medicine practice in New York City. Thank you so much for taking the time to share with your knowledge with us today, Dr. Hoffman.
Thank you, Matthew.
And when we return, those soothing sounds you hear, we hope they're going to warm you up as we look at Kansas City's reggae scene. Central Standard will return in just a moment.